All right, welcome. Thank you for coming. My name is Brian Harry, and I'm going to talk to you today about DevOps and sort of how DevOps is evolving. You know, it's funny, I've been talking about DevOps now for, I don't know, probably 3 years, 4 years, something like that, going to customers and talking about sort of how to speed up the delivery process and iterate rapidly. And in fact, I was chatting with Jamie earlier today, and we were arguing over whether our journey to kind of DevOps started in 2010 or 2011. I don't remember which it was, but whatever it was, it's been a sizable journey. And we're going to show you a bunch of stuff today in terms of what Team Services and Team Foundation Server can do for you or help you do with respect to DevOps. And I remember when I first started talking to people, and we talk about, you know, we're going to enable you to release, you know, every day, every week, kinds of things, you know, people's just faces would kind of glaze over. You're like, yeah, I can't even dream of that world. It's just so far from my reality. And the world is seriously changing. DevOps practices have sort of gone from sort of early dreaming to serious adoption. And everything I'm going to show you today, we actually use. This is what we do to ship Visual Studio Team Services and Team Foundation Server. And we do it and accomplish amazing iteration paces and amazing velocity from the developer to the production environment. So there was a study recently in the State of DevOps report that sort of analyzed the adoption of DevOps practices and where people are. And they sort of, you know, striated the universe into people who have very mature DevOps practices and people who have a very immature or really haven't started down the DevOps journey. And kind of their assessment was that, you know, people at the bottom of that compared to people at the top people were deploying about 200 times more frequently than people at the bottom, and that the lead times were about 2,500 times shorter. So what does lead time mean? Lead time means the time it takes from code that the developer checks in to make it to a customer. It doesn't have to be every customer, but it's some set of customers. How long is that time period? And there's, excuse me, there's a lot that happens in that time period. But the difference is 2,500 times. So what does that mean? That means if the best organizations, and I'm just making up numbers here, if the best organizations do it in about an hour, then the bottom are doing it in about 3 months. That's kind of roughly the 2,500 times period. So it gives you an idea of how big a difference that is. So the first thing I wanted to announce, and Scott talked a little bit about the keynote this morning. We're releasing today Team Foundation Server 2017. I'm very excited about that. I think not a day has gone by in the past 3 months that I haven't gotten a customer email, a blog comment, something of somebody asking me, can you tell me when it's going to ship? And I just kept saying, soon. It's shipping soon. Well, I don't have to anymore. It's today. And it's got a ton of great stuff in it that I'm going to talk about. It's the next major release of Team Foundation Server. It rolls up all the stuff we've been shipping in the cloud and really moves our capabilities forward. Put that in perspective. To remind everybody, we have two products. We have Team Foundation Server and we have Visual Studio Team Services. They are the same thing when you get right down to it. Same set of capabilities, at least to a first approximation. Team Foundation Server, we ship. You install it on premises. You manage it. You secure it. You do everything. And you have complete control over it. And Team Services, we provide in the cloud. You connect to it in the cloud. We manage it. We keep it up to date. You just use it. And certainly we've seen a significant trend of people shifting from on-prem to cloud, but there's still a lot of on-prem users. So there have been a lot of people eagerly awaiting the Team Foundation Server 2017 release. So a lot of cool new stuff. There's no way I could cover it all. I'm not going to try to. But here's sort of just a rough word cloud of some of the big things that are in TFS 2017. Some things I want to call out: CodeSearch. So CodeSearch's been on the cloud for a little while. We shipped it on-prem now, so you can search across all of the code in your Team Foundation Server. The new pull request experience, a very social, very fluid pull request experience that also has sort of all the policy controls that you want to be able to enforce the sort of the security and the quality that you want. Things like better Azure integration to be able to easily provision and deploy your app into the cloud, Docker integration to support Docker containers, new package management service. The on-prem version in TFS 2017 supports NuGet. We've just added NPM support to Team Services. In fact, that went live today, and it will show up on-prem in update one. So there will be an update one. Our updates are, you know, roughly 3 or 4 months. So expect in 3 or 4 months there'll be an update one, and we'll have NPM support on-prem as well. So it's an exciting release. I'm very, very happy about it. So another thing is, as I mentioned, you know, we see definitely a shift in kind of mentality around cloud. Again, back in 2010 or 11, when we started our cloud journey, the vast majority of customers I talked to said, "Yeah, no way. I'm not putting my code in the cloud. I don't trust it. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen." And that is continuing to shift. And now we're seeing some of our very large customers, thousands of users, moving to Team Services. We, Microsoft, have moved to Team Services. I think last I checked, about 60,000 active users in our Microsoft Team Services accounts. We've got about a dozen or so accounts spread across Microsoft. And as part of that, as we see customers who are interested in moving from Team Foundation Server to the cloud for the benefits of us managing it and keeping it up to date, everyone's asking, "Well, great. How do I want to take my data with me? Right? I've got a bunch of code. I've got a bunch of work items. I've got builds. I've got releases. I've got tests. I've got all this stuff. How do I take that with me to the cloud?" And so we've been working for probably 9 months or so on a Team Foundation Server import experience for Team Services, and we've been piloting that with a handful of customers. We've now brought on probably a dozen or two big customers, thousands upon thousands of users using this. It basically takes a Team Foundation Server project collection and just sucks it into the cloud. You have to map identities, like your Active Directory identities have to get mapped to your AAD identities and stuff like that. But when you upload it on a Friday, it does the import, and you do a little validation, and Monday morning when your developers come in, everything's in the cloud, and they just keep working. The only thing they have to do is change their connection string. Everything they were doing, all the data they had, all the identities, all the permissions, everything is up there, everything's working. So super, super nice experience. If you're interested, go to this URL on aka.ms/tfs-import-data. It's in preview, so we're kind of still in a bit of a hand-holding experience, but if you're interested, go there, sign up, and say you're interested, and we'll get in touch with you and show you how to do it. All right. So let's talk about where we're going with DevOps and the progress that we've made in Team Services recently and in TFS 2017. You know, one of the big things that about DevOps is it's not a technology-specific thing, right? The need to kind of iterate rapidly, deploy, diagnose, all of that stuff. It doesn't matter whether you're working in Java or you're working in .NET or you're working in PHP or you're working in Node. You need all of those capabilities. And having sort of that team collaboration across an increasingly heterogeneous technology stack is critically important to your success. So for a few years now, we've been saying, "Hey, we are, we're DevOps for everybody." And about 2 years ago, we introduced a marketplace that we call the Visual Studio Marketplace, and opened up extensibility for Visual Studio Team Services, and then a little later for Team Foundation Server. So the marketplace now is an awesome place. It's got tons of stuff in it. It's got a bunch of free stuff, everything from little widgets up to integrations with other apps, up to entire applications shipped as extensions to Visual Studio Team Services and Team Foundation Server. And some free, some paid, a lot of options there. If you look at the momentum there, a lot of interest, a lot of use. Some numbers, 190,000. So the top row is all just Team Services and TFS. The 190,000 extensions installed, 38,000 accounts have had extensions installed. And there's a total of 293 extensions in the Team Services marketplace right now. And that's growing at the rate of about one a day. So I watch it pretty regularly. Every day someone's uploading a new extension to integrate with something new or to add some new capability to Teams services. It's really exciting to watch that move forward. The bottom row is kind of broadly the marketplace. The marketplace also includes VS Code extensions and Visual Studio extensions. So there we've got 12.3 million installs across VS Code, Visual Studio, and Teams services. 4,800 publishers publishing extensions in the marketplace, and 2.6 million unique marketplace users. So a very, very sort of active and engaged ecosystem, producing extensions, consuming extensions, great opportunities on both sides to both build and build a reputation and maybe even build a business and to find stuff that you need. So normally at this point in a presentation, I would stop and I would do a demo showing you how great we can make this, you know, your DevOps workflow is. I would show an ASP.NET application running on Windows. And I've done that in almost every presentation I've done for the last 5 years. And at the same time, for like the last 2 years, I've been telling everybody, hey, it's any app, any platform, any code. We work for your entire team, regardless of the technology stack. And so this time, I decided I'd sort of break the mold, and we'd do a demo that's sort of nothing Microsoft, except for team services and some Azure stuff. But none of the platform stuff. It's Java on Linux using Docker. So that's the demo we're going to do, all orchestrated by team services on Azure. Jamie, you want to come up and show us how awesome it is?
No pressure.
All right. Thanks.
All right, so we're going to do a complete end-to-end from the very start, getting an idea, all the way through deploying it to production. Now, while we're going to be using a Java app for this, this is essentially exactly how we use team services to ship team services. It's almost the same workflow. So for this demo, I'm a Java dev. I work on the My Shuttle project on my team with Brian and a few others. And we have a simple little app that helps our shuttle drivers track their fares. And if we go look at it, log in, we can see, you know, we've got a list of fares here. And, you know, what it's missing is the total sum of fares. So our job in this demo is going to be to add that feature to sum up our fares. So let's start. And we'll start by going to our Kanban board. This is where my team uses to manage all of their work to see what's going on. Right here, I've already got an item that's waiting for me to be picked up. It's already been broken out into tasks. It's been broken out with a couple test cases as well. But I'm just going to take this item, and I'm going to work on it. So let's move it into our expedite doing column. And then, you know, at this point, we use Git. So the way that you actually work as a dev with Git is that you create a topic branch. You do your work there, make sure it's good, put it through its gates, and then merge it up. So I could go over into my development tools and create the branch, but I really want to create a linkage between the work and the actual development that I do. And, you know, project managers kind of hate having to go around and get people to update their bugs. So, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I could just, you know, from this board, start out here and create a new branch? So that's what we're going to go do. And by doing this, we'll automatically link it up to this work item. And we'll create our branch. This will take me to the Git repo with this new branch that we just created. So now I'm ready to actually implement the feature. Now I work as a Java dev in either Eclipse and IntelliJ or IntelliJ. In this case, we're going to use IntelliJ. So I could go over to IntelliJ, I could take the clone URL, I could use all the built-in Git stuff to clone it down, and all that would work fine. And we'll be using some of that. But we have a plugin for both Eclipse and IntelliJ that makes it really easy for developers to work with team services in those IDEs. And I'm going to show you a few features of those plugins as we go. And you know, the first feature is that regardless of which of the IDEs you're using, whether it's Android Studio or PyCharm or WebStorm, or in this case, IntelliJ, just by doing that one simple click from the web, we're going to launch IntelliJ. It'll come up. We'll unlock our keychain. Hopefully, we'll unlock our keychain. And then it'll clone down that repository, check out the branch that we just created, open up the IntelliJ solution, and now I've got our project ready for me to work on right out of Team Services. few other really cool features in this plugin. I can see the status of my build. So I can see down here that my master branch is green. So if anybody breaks my build while I'm in the IDE, which is where I spend a lot of time as dev, I'll be able to see that. I can also see my issues. So if I go look at my work items here, I can see these are the work items that are assigned to me. And here's the first work item in our list that we're working on right here. And I can see it's got a branch associated with it. So I can see that association if I'm working on multiple things at the same time. In fact, if I open up that work item, I can see in the development section over here, I have a link between the branch I created in my Git repo and that work item because I started from the backlog. Okay, let's go ahead and make our code change. So we're implementing the summary. So the first thing we got to do is put our UI in place. And it turns out I am just one of those devs that just knows what the project teams when it wants. So I've already implemented it. So there's our UI. And as luck would have it, I also need to implement it in our model. But that's already there too. So great. We've implemented our feature. That was pretty easy. I wish I could tell you we made everything that easy. OK, so now we're going to commit our changes locally to our Git repo. And it's got a summary of all the changes up there. But a lot of times, I was smart in this flow in that I linked my work item before I even started. But sometimes you don't do that. Or sometimes it turns out you actually fix more items in the process than what you plan to. So we make it really easy when you're actually committing to see the work that's assigned to you. So if you wanted to come in and say, it turns out in doing this work, I actually took care of those issues too. So let me go ahead and link those up and have it populate my commit message to make that even easier. I can get that set up. So we'll just put in here our title, adding a summary, and commit that. So now we have our changes checked in locally. Now the way in Git that you typically flow your code is with pull requests. You create a pull request to get these changes reviewed, make sure they're good, and then if it's signed off on, then it flows up into the master branch. So again, in IntelliJ with our plugin, I can see all of the pull requests that are relevant to me. So in this case, I've got two pull requests from Sachin that he's asking me to review for him. Now, I'm doing a demo, so he's going to have to wait. I've got my changes I want to flow. So right in IntelliJ, I'm going to create a new pull request. And it's already got all the defaults filled out based on the commits that I put into it. I can review the summary of the actual code changes of the diff that I'm sending up, and then create the pull request. So this will do two things. It'll publish the local changes that we have in our local Git repo up to our branch in Team Services, and it'll create the pull request. And if I follow this pull request, it'll show me the pull request in Team Services. Now, there's a couple of interesting things here to note. One, we linked three work items in this process, one from the backlog, two from inside of IntelliJ, and all three of them are associated with this particular pull request. You can also see down here that I have a reviewer, in this case, Brian, because Brian is responsible for the code that I changed, so he automatically got added as a reviewer for this particular code. I can come in and I can also put a description, which is, let's hurry up because we need to get this done, and we have full markdown support, so I can put in emojis or whatever else I want to put as part of this. And I can see, down here that as I was doing this, Brian already left a comment. And if I go into our file view, I can get the full view of the diff and the comment that Brian's leaving. Oh, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate that. So I'll just leave him another little handy emoji for that. So this is good. I'm feeling good about my change. And, I can see that Brian approved it, which is great. But if I look up here in the policy section, my problem is that I still have a policy failing. So we have a fully flexible policy system. So you can define whatever policies your team needs for how it works. And this is pretty similar to the ones that we use, which is I've configured it such that you have to have a reviewer sign off, and you have to have an automated build pass and say that this change is good before it goes up to master. So as soon as I created this pull request, it automatically triggered a build. And in this case, for some reason, the build's failing, so my policies aren't met. So I can jump right into that build. And if I go in here, I can see that we're using Maven to do the build. And if I look at the results, I can see we ran a bunch of tests. We have some JUnit tests. We also have Jococo code coverage down here that we're running as part of this. I can see my code coverage is a little bit low. We'll work on that in the future. But my problem is that one of my tests failed. So if I drill into that, I can see, you know, I've got in this case, four tests. You know, three of them are succeeding, one of them's failing. And I can see over here what's going on, where it's at. You know, this also could start to be a trend. In fact, I can look and drill into a chart, and kind of not surprising for a demo, you can see it goes from like passing, failing pretty consistently, right? You can kind of guess why. But you know, if this was something that I really wanted to keep track of because I'm having trouble with my PR build staying high quality, I want my team to stay on top of it, I can just click and add this to a dashboard. And now if I jump over and go to my team's dashboard, which is what my team has customized for all of the data that is relevant to us, you know, down here, we've pinned this particular widget. So if that's relevant to my team, then we can stay on top of that and drive more awareness in the team. We need to keep that up. All right, but I can see right here, there's a unit test broken. That's my problem. Let's go get that fixed. So I'm going to go fix that unit test, but I could fix it and then submit it, wait for the build to run, then come back sometime later after I got coffee and see if it passed, and then click the approve button, the complete button for it to go. But I'm going to take advantage of another feature here, and the developers inside of Team Services use this a lot, which is because we have good automated policy in our DevOps system, I know if the build and test pass, this is going to be a good change, especially since Brian's also looked at the core change. I'm just going to mark it to autocomplete, which means as soon as all of the policies are met, it'll automatically merge it and let my code flow so I can keep it flowing as fast as possible. So I've got that set up. Now let's go back to IntelliJ and let's fix our test. And wouldn't you know it, I was also smart enough to have the unit test ready to go. Brian, if only you had more devs like me, right? Okay. And then we will commit and we'll send this up to the topic to our branch. It's already up there. This is another kind of cool way to use Git. And then if we go back, essentially what's happened is we kicked off a new build already. We've added another update. Another update's come in, update 2. But we're going to do a little split screen magic here where we're going to pull out our build, set it off to the side here. And then what's going to happen if we get that over there? And then on the right, what you're going to see is the build's running. It's going to run Maven. It's going to run our JUnit tests. Assuming all of those pass, then the build's going to be marked as successful, which will mark the build policy on our pull requests as successful. When that's marked as successful, it'll automatically complete the build and flow our change. So let's wait. The build succeeded. Policy succeeded. And there we go, our pull request automatically completed, merging these changes up into the master branch because all of our policies were met. Now, if this was a bad change, I could revert this change pretty easily. If I needed to expedite this change out to production, I could cherry pick this up into a release branch. But in this case, it automatically merged up. I have a nice clean merge commit in my master branch. This merge commit has all the traceability we've been building up to this point. So this is the actual summary of the code changes that we made through those two commits. It's got a link to the pull request, so I can trace back to the history of the review. So if this is a bad change, I can blame Brian because he signed off. It's got a link to all three of those work items that have been part of this change that we've been going through. And it automatically triggered the main CI build for the master branch now that there's a new change in master. And that's already proceeding. And this particular build is doing a ton of stuff, right? In fact, let's go ahead and drill into this particular build and look at what it does. So what does it do? Primarily, it runs Maven. Runs Maven, produces a package file. Then it runs our unit tests with JUnit. Then it runs our code coverage with Jococo. Then it's going to do code analysis with SonarQube. Then, you know, Brian mentioned this was a Docker-based application. If I look at the Docker Compose file that powers it, it's actually a two-container application. It's got a web container and a database container. So the actual master, the build that's coming out of the master branch is going to build those two Docker images. It's doing that with our Docker task that we have and that we have updated versions available this week. Once you produce Docker containers, then what you do is you publish them to a registry. So you could publish this to any registry. You could publish it to the Docker Hub registry, whatever private one you've set up. You could also publish this to the new Azure Container Registry, which is what we're doing here. So again, with our built-in tasks, it's publishing it to the Azure Container Registry. So it gets all of those things going. The nice thing, though, is that those are what this one's doing. It can really do anything. In fact, if we go into our task catalog, you know, whether this was a .NET Core app or an Android app or an Xcode app or a Xamarin app, you could build it with it. Whether this is for testing, if I wanted to use JMeter because this is a Java application, I could do that. For deployment, when we get to that point, we're going to use a bunch of Azure tasks. But if I wanted to use something like Chef, I could do that. If I wanted to use just run an SSH script, I could do that. There's a full set. And this is a growing ecosystem. Brian talked a little bit about that. We actually have two things that I think have really helped us drive this ecosystem the way it has. One is that all of the tasks that we from Microsoft ship are open source on GitHub. So this has driven a nice, healthy community. And in fact, if we go look at our contributors, it takes a little while to load because there's a pretty big set here as we go through. Just lots and lots and lots. I got to move my mouse a couple of times of folks inside and outside the company that have been contributing to this. So that's been a big plus. The other thing is that via the marketplace, folks can install additional built-in release extensions that add additional tasks and capabilities that you can use in your build or your release pipeline. And there's a lot, and continuing to grow every single day. So let's go back and look at this build. It should have completed by now. If we jump in, it has. If we look at what this build actually did, you can see it ran our tests, all of them passed. That's great. It ran our code coverage. And I can actually see with this change, my code coverage is going down because I added more code than I accounted for with my testing. So I should probably address that at some point. We also ran SonarQube. It says that my quality gate's passing, and I can drill in to the actual SonarQube dashboard from here. And this is telling me that, you know, for this one, there were zero new bugs, zero new vulnerabilities. I had some outstanding debt previously, but I didn't incur any new ones as part of this particular build, so this change is okay to move forward. I can deal with that other debt whenever I get to it. The other thing on this down here at the bottom is the deployment section. So what's happened is I've kicked off a deployment automatically when we had a good build out of master. And in this case, we're automatically deploying to the development environment that we have set up because we want to get that going, make sure deployment's good, get our tests running on that. And if we drill into that particular release, in this case it was release 50 that was automatically created, and we look at our logs, we can see that it's doing a couple of things. Of note, it's deploying to DCOS running in Azure Container Service. So it's taking those two Docker containers that are in the Azure Container Registry and deploying them into Azure in the Azure Container Service, and that'll be our running application. The other thing that it's doing once that app is now running is it's then using, you know, Maven to go drive some Selenium tests to basically do functional tests to make sure the application itself that I currently deployed is in fact looking good. And that first deployment to our first development environment just finished. And now if I go look at this release, I can see a bunch of things. I can see for this release to the development environment, all of my tests have passed and succeeded. So I know my app is looking good. I can also see effectively the release notes for this release. Here are the three work items that we did in this process that are in this release as part of this change. Here are the commits, the core commit that we made to the master branch that is part of this release. If something's wrong with this deployment, it's going to be part of this code change, and I can trace it back and figure it out. And now, if we go to back to our app, and we look, we see we've in fact added our total. Not quite done yet, though, because if we go, this is our development environment. If we look at our actual production environments, and we go into that, you can see I don't actually have that feature yet. We haven't deployed it yet. And why is that? Well, if we jump back and we look at this release, I can see the development environment's at release 50. The production environment's still at release 49. It hasn't rolled out yet. And that's because the production environment is set up with a manual gate to make sure someone has looked at it, reviewed it, and signed off that it's ready to roll out in production. And in this case, it's telling me that it's waiting for an approval. So I can come up here, and Brian and I are both the only people in the team that are allowed to actually approve a rollout to production, and I can approve it. And now it's going to run exactly that same automation that we used to deploy to development that worked, and it'll deploy it to production. We wanted to have multiple environments, you know, to go from development to test to staging to production. Like, you can set that up however you want. Now, I know this is going to succeed because it's, like I said, it's the same exact automation. So I'm ready to call this a success. Let's jump back to where we started. And I'm going to take this work item that we started, and I'm going to move it all the way over here into the done column. And I'm going to come in, and I'm just going to say, and the other thing to note, you can see up here in the work item that all of the things we've been building up have been linking to this work item because it's where we started. So full traceability. So I'll just come down here and I'll just say, at Brian, hey, check it out. And then I'll save it. And because I at mentioned Brian, he's now going to get an email notification telling him that someone's, you know, calling him out in a work item. And it's all done. So Brian, check it out. What do you think?
Awesome. Thank you. Get the phone displayed. All right, Jamie. So Jamie has just notified me that or updated the work item and at mentioned me, which of course sends me an email notification. And in our we just had a an online chat a few minutes ago, and one of the questions I got is, "Hey, are you guys doing anything to make mobile work any better?" So I was going to demo it. Okay.
So as soon as it comes on there, here you go, breakout demo.
I'm going to tell a little joke here.
All right.
I got to use this to tell a little joke here, Brian.
Go right ahead.
Brian uses a Windows phone.
It is true.
We had to set him up with an iPhone for the demo, so he's got to bear with him a little bit on the journey.
He told me it would be embarrassing if I did a demo with the Windows phone, but you know. All right, so.
I didn't say that.
Embarrassing for him, not for me.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
All right, so as I say, we've been getting questions about, hey, are we going to do a mobile experience? So this is the beginnings of a mobile experience. Here you can see the work item notification that I got in a nice mobile-friendly email. I can click on View Work Item, and very quickly I get a nice mobile-friendly view of the work item that allows me to look through what happened. As you can see, Jamie has run this demo a bunch of times and sent me a bunch of emails. But you get a very nice view of your work. Now, we're starting with work. Over time, we'll add pull requests and release approvals and other things. But it's very cool to start to get a nice mobile experience. All right. Oops. Let me go back to slides for just a minute. Okay, so I want to talk a bit, so we showed you obviously a Java, Linux, a Docker demo. I could have done a .NET demo, it would have been just as awesome. But, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to customers, and I swear I go to all these customers, and they want to talk to me about .NET. And I say, well, by the way, did you know we also do, you know, Java and PHP and Node, and we do all that really well, too? And they're like, what? Well, Microsoft has something for Java? Why? Like, what are you guys doing? I never heard of it before. And so I wanted to kind of go out of my way to show that we can create an incredibly compelling experience regardless of what technology stack that you're working on. This really is a tool. TFS and VSTS can do everything he showed you. And this is really something that can work for you regardless of what your technology stack is. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about trends and sort of where we see DevOps going. You know, that was a rich demo. DevOps is not just about going fast. You know, it's great to go fast, but if you go fast off a cliff, you haven't gotten anywhere useful. So there's this evolving notion that people are calling rugged DevOps, which is not only do I need to go fast, but I need to go safe. I need to meet my compliance requirements, I need to meet my security requirements, I need to meet my quality requirements. These are very important things, and they're things I can't sacrifice as I speed up what I'm doing. So I want to sort of refer back to the marketplace here. We've got some great partners who are helping us build out our rugged DevOps offering. And there are three here that I want to call out. One is Veracode. Veracode has a really nice extension that integrates with their service in order for you to upload binaries out of your build process, scan them, look for security holes, look for common coding errors, stuff like that, and then those get reported back. Same thing for Checkmarks, except Checkmarks does it at the code level. So it actually does scanning at your source code, but also looks for common problems and security vulnerabilities and that kind of thing to make sure that as part of this automated release pipeline, you're making sure that, that what you're producing is good and is safe. And then WhiteSource tackles, I think, sort of both security and compliance. They have a very interesting offering which focuses on your use of open source. And I mean, everybody uses open source today and somewhere in their application portfolio. And what WhiteSource does is it's able to scan your projects, integrate into your build, scan everything that you're doing, look at what open source you have, catalog it for you, let you know what licenses you sort of need to be complying with. But they also keep a catalog of all the open source in the world, or at least a big chunk of it, and they track what the known issues with it are, like, you know, version 1.6.3 of jQuery has the following bugs that open up these possible vulnerabilities. And so they scan your code and they'll tell you, hey, you have that version in that app. These are the possible vulnerabilities you have. You need to go look at that and remediate it, fix it, update your app, you know, update the version of jQuery that you're using. Really cool tool. So these are three great partners that we have in our marketplace, adding distinctive value to help you create not only a great, rapid, agile DevOps process, but a secure, reliable, and compliant one as well. So other trends, you know, as you try to sort of increase the speed on that cycle, we think about sort of compressing the process. And a lot of what happens is you take a lot of that process that used to happen, I call in the middle, sort of integration testing and the various system testing that used to happen, and you push it to the ends. One part called shift left is about taking a lot of those activities and moving them into the developer's inner loop. If you're going to be fast, you can't wait late in the process to then find out, oh my gosh, I've got some big problem I got to go back and fix. You need to get it in the developer's face as part of their inner loop coding, in, you know, ideally in the IDE, you know, saying, hey, that's, you know, that's a problem you need to go address. And we're doing things, you can see investments like the live unit testing that we've introduced in the VS 2017 RC that gives you instantaneous feedback directly in your editing experience of how your testing is going. So that's great. On the other side, there's shift right, which is pushing more stuff into production. The faster you're going to iterate, the more you have to be really, really aware of what's happening in your production environment, who your users are, what they're doing, what performance they're experiencing, what application failures they're seeing. You need to be able to root cause those really easy, and you need to be able to take all of that, feed all that data out of production back into your development process so that you can correct quickly. You're going to be deploying quickly, and you need to be able to correct and adjust quickly. So one of the things that we're doing is Application Insights to help particularly with the production side of that. Application Insights is a fantastic tool for understanding what's happening inside your application in production. It's a broad tool that has a whole bunch of capabilities that works like Team Services does on any kind of app. There's mobile capabilities, there's Java capabilities, there's .NET capabilities. And it really gives you deep insight into what's happening in your application, enables you to chart and mine and alert and all of those things that you'd want to be able to do. So I want to do a brief demo, or maybe it won't be that brief, of my favorite feature of Application Insights. So Application Insights, as I said, is a broad set of capabilities, but there's one set of capabilities which I just can't get enough of. I love it. It's called Application Insights Analytics. And it is, basically, it's a log mining capability. Your application exhausts tons of data, and now you need to figure out how to make sense out of all of that data. This capability, and more specifically, the engine beneath this capability, has taken Microsoft by storm. Like, every major service at Microsoft now uses this for their live-site operations of their service. Azure uses it, Office 365 uses it, Windows uses it, Power BI uses it. Everybody uses this. This is what we do. In fact, we recently, last week, hit our first day where the Application Insights Analytics backend ingested 2 petabytes of telemetry in one day. 2 petabytes per day. Wasn't that long ago that a terabyte seemed like a lot of data? The number just absolutely blows my mind. 2 petabytes of data a day, and yet is able to process over it incredibly quickly. And that is the magic of the analytics capability here, is it is able to give you incredible ability to mine interactively, fluidly, and responsively tremendous amounts of data. So I'm going to walk you through a demo. And rather than using some cheesy sample data, I'm going to take the team services data. I'm going to show you this demo on the actual operational telemetry in our live telemetry system in our for team services. So let's start with a simple question. And now it's going to warm up and make me look like a liar on speed, because this usually runs in like that. Oh, no, that's right. Mac mouse moves the other way. Jamie warned me of that. I'm not a Mac user. All right, there we go. The rest better be fast. So, in fact, that number changed because it was 2.5 billion rows when I looked earlier today. So it's 2.778 billion rows of telemetry in the VSTS system. So you might think it would take a long time to work with 2.7 billion rows. Well, let's take that and let's look at the last week of data and see sort of how that data comes in. All right. It's all your fault, Jamie. You slowed down the computer for me. Say what? I could collect a particular query? Oh, highlight. Yeah, I just have to put my cursor in it is all I have to do. All right. So here's the distribution over the last week of team services. And this is a pretty typical distribution for us. We get kind of 3 peaks in our day. That's Europe, that's US, that's Asia. You get big daytimes during the week, lows on weekends, kind of lows at night. That's kind of what it usually looks like for us. Team services is a microservices architecture. So let's take that and break it down by service. So that was sort of all of the telemetry across all of team services. That was faster. That's how it usually is. We got 27 microservices in team services. The top one is the TFS, which is what's left of what we started with the TFS monolith. And it had 1.3 billion rows and kind of descending. So that's pretty cool. I can see that. All right. Well, let's look at the last week, how many errors I had. Did we have any significant issues in team services in the last week? Yes, I heard somebody say. Oh, that was Ed. You're cheating. All right. It is disappointing me because this is usually like 1 second. The answer, of course, is yes. There we go. All right. So, you can observe, holy cow, this is errors, usually not very many, But boy, one day we had a really big set of errors. So let's sort of jump in on that and ask, what the heck happened there? So let's, what I'm going to do is I'm going to zoom in on a set of time. And I'm not going to try to teach you the query language here. It's pretty easy. It's kind of SQL-like, but that's not my goal. I'm going to zoom in kind of a two-hour period, or actually, sorry, a one-hour period, and understand what happened there. I'm going to run a function in analytics called AutoCluster. And AutoCluster is a super cool capability. Let's run that. And what it's going to do is it's going to take the results of sort of some query, which is the telemetry in that hour period, and it's going to analyze it and look for patterns in it and try to tell me, all right, here are the things that are similar about all of the telemetry in that period. And what it tells me, if you look here, is, all right, all of your errors were in the blob service. Okay, so that entire peak, kind of every error was in the blob service, or at least 98.8% of all my errors were in the blob service. They were all on scale unit zero. We have like 8 scale units. So this was one scale unit that went bad. It wasn't any particular role instance. It was sort of spread across the role instance. And all of the errors were access denied, queue cloud build service account 2 needs basically permission. And so we went and looked into that, and sure enough, wasn't a live site incident. What happened is somebody changed permissions on one of our build accounts that we use for internal Microsoft builds, and it has thousands of agents, and they all started failing, and so they all started reporting telemetry that they failed. Thankfully, no external customer saw any problem. It was just our internal build service stopped working because somebody changed permissions. But that's good to know, and I can go fix that. All right, I'm going to risk it and try one more. So another thing I wanted to show you. Here we go. If I go back to that first chart, that was fast again. This big spike stood out. But you know what? There's a little spike down here, which is clearly something was going wrong in this period that is not right. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's a longer-term issue. So we can drill into that one and run the same auto cluster, but this time it's an auto cluster over a 38-hour window instead of a one-hour window, because this wasn't a huge spike. This was a prolonged issue where we were having problems. So it's going to take all that data, and this time it's going to find, hey, you know what? 79.9% of my issues were in a service called SPSEXT. They were on scale unit 1 in the application client notification. And if I scroll out to the right, what I'll see is they were notification service not available at this time. Please try again. That's what the error was. Now, you'll see some other errors this time. It's a 38-hour window. There are going to be some other errors in a 38-hour window. But boy, the 80% really stands out. That looks like seriously wrong. And so you go, okay, what client service notification? It was basically a service bus application, and it got, you know, application not available, please try again. What does that mean? Service bus is overloaded. And sure enough, this was our, VS has a roaming settings option where, you know, you run VS on one machine and then you run it on another machine and all your settings move over to the other machine. That uses this service, and that service was broken. And what happened was we exceeded the capacity of the service bus topics that we had, and it fell over. It stopped responding. Now, you might say we should have had an alert that would have noticed of that. It was a monitoring hole. We didn't have an alert to catch that particular issue. This tool allowed us to super easily drill in and understand what was happening there. So once we found that alert hole, we started thinking, oh man, let's look at this. This was a real issue that affected customers. Did that last one only affected one customer? It was an internal thing. How many customers did this one affect? Because this was a public one. Well, I can quickly create a graph that basically has shown me a distinct count of identities, and we're in the hundreds of people per 5-minute period. So a lot of people hit this issue. This was a widespread problem across our customer base. That's bad. And so we've got a bad alert hole. We need to figure out, did we miss anything else? So we're going to take this 38-hour period, and we're going to say, oops. Give me 1 second. Did I do something wrong? Give me 1 second. No. Somewhere I put a syntax error in here as we were preparing for the demo. Anyway, what this does, this rather lengthy query, is it takes the 38-hour window before that 38 hours and that 38-hour window and diffs them and says, what was the error population in the 38-hour window before? What was the error population in that 38-hour window? And what changed? And if I had not typed a syntax error in this query, what you would see is that was the only thing. So all the other errors were noise, off by 10 or 20. That one was off by 290,000. So it helps me understand, okay, phew, that was my only issue in that 38-hour window. That's good. So it's just an incredibly powerful mining tool. All that time, I'm mining over 2 billion rows of data, and it's just sort of popping back with pretty sophisticated queries. I mean, this one's a good example of one that has quite a lot of analysis built into it. So very exciting. It just GA'd today, and I strongly encourage you to check it out. So back to slides. Actually, I think I know. Yeah. All right, good. All right, and so another important thing about DevOps is there's two phenomena happening. DevOps is one, which is sort of about this rapid iteration and in automating your development process. And the second is cloud. And the point that I want to make is the two are complementary. And in fact, you can't achieve all of the advantages of one without the other. DevOps automates your development process and makes you much more agile at your ability to configure and deploy and manage your application. And cloud automates your infrastructure process and makes you much more able to iterate and deploy and configure in a much more rapid way. And if one without the other, you're only going to get half of the speed up. So you really have to think about doing both. They compose together in a really natural way. And in that vein, we're going to go to the last demo, which is we've been doing some work. Setting up a DevOps pipeline can be daunting. You saw Jamie's demo of the task list. There's a lot of tasks. There's a lot of stuff. Which ones do you pick? Which ones do you need to do it? So it's because we support every kind of application there is. So how do I have to pick through all that to figure out what's right for my application. So we started doing some work around recognizing specific application types and setting up for you a DevOps pipeline that's a great starting point from which then you can customize and build out. And Jamie's going to show you some work we've been doing for Azure Web Apps.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, so I talked to lots of folks that they've got automated builds at this point, but they still deploy manually. And everybody is saying DevOps, DevOps, DevOps. We're here saying it. Brian, Donovan's going around telling everybody to rub some DevOps on it. But I see lots of folks, they're not quite sure how to take that first step, like to get to that world where everything is automated. So I'm really excited to show you a new feature that we just released this week. It's available now. And it helps bridge that gap and help people get the scaffolding they need to take that first step to automated deployment. So in this demo, I got an ASP.NET app, because we did Java last time, everything in balance. And It's our Parts Unlimited, you know, classic demo apps. Demo apps are okay. I know we can't always use live data. And we're going to get a CI/CD pipeline. And, you know, right now, I just do the normal right-click in VS, publish to deploy to it. But I want to really, for my prod deployment, get this thing set up. So let's do it from complete scratch. We're going to go make a new Azure web app. And we will call this, we'll call this Parts Unlimited Prod. We'll use an existing resource group. And we'll create that. Now, hopefully, in about 10 or 15 seconds, we'll have a new Azure web app. And then what we're going to do is we're going to stay completely with inside of the Azure portal. And we're going to configure a CI/CD pipeline in VSTS. So we have our new web app. If you create a new web app now, you're going to see down here this new option called Continuous Delivery. And what that's going to give you is essentially a walkthrough that's going to ask you a couple of questions and based on that, set up your pipeline. So let's go do this. So right now, I have my Parts Unlimited code in our Git repository. It's in Team Services. It could be in GitHub as well. We support both. So now I'm just going to connect to that particular repository. So we're going to go down and we'll select select our code, Parts Unlimited, and we're going to build out of the ASP.NET 45 branch. And then it's an ASP.NET app. Like I said, we support a broad set of app types, and we're continuing to expand that set for our default set. Now, I'm not going to just set up continuous deployment to this one web app. I'm actually going to set up a two-stage pipeline. And if I wanted to, I could just go have this process create a whole new web app for me that'll be the test version of the web app that we'll deploy to first, run some tests, in particular a load test, make sure it's good, then go to the production deployment that we have here. So I'm going to go ahead and just use that web app that we had before that I was doing my manual deployments for. That'll become my test environment. And then if I upgraded this web app to a paid SKU, it actually has a pretty cool feature called deployment slots, which lets you roll out to that web app, but not actually make it live until you do the VIP swap as the final step. So we haven't upgraded to the paid SKU, so I'm just going to leave that off for right now. But just with those few clicks, I've set it up to go and configure all of that. And if we look at what that's actually doing behind the scenes, I'm going to jump over into the Team Services account that we connected to. And in about a second here, you're going to see a new build definition just appeared. And if we look at what this build definition is doing, is because it was an ASP.NET app, it's set up to build it. You know, do the NuGet restore, do the build, run my tests, save my artifacts. If it had been a Node app or something else, it would be setting up what it needed for that type of application. The other thing that it did is if I jump over to release management, it's going to take the output of that build and it automatically set up a new build definition for me. Sorry, a new release definition for me. And inside of that, I've got two different environments. One of them is our test environment we talked about, which is going to use our built-in task to deploy the output of that ASP.NET app to the Azure App Service. It's then going to run the performance test, the load test that we looked at before. Then, if all of that passes, it'll deploy to production. Now, the nice thing about all this is really just a scaffolding that'll work out of the box. If you wanted to come in and add new tasks, new capabilities to your pipeline, or you wanted to add a new environment, you know, as part of this flow, or you wanted to set it up so that, you know, for the production environment, you know, only certain people are allowed to approve the actual deployment, you have all of that as a working baseline for it. And if we jump back, we can see that it's actually completed this workflow and gone through the process of triggering the first deployment. And that's going to take a few minutes because it's doing things like running some performance tests. But if I look at one that I set up earlier that's already gone through it, not only is it configured all of that, but it's done the deployment to test, it's done the deployment to staging, which was a staging slot, and then done the VIP swap to actually do the production deployment. And the other cool thing is inside of the actual Azure portal, I can have traceability back into Team Services. So if I want to see for this deployment, you know, like maybe I did the deployment and then it's kind of acting up, I can trace back from here to see, okay, yeah, I did a deployment at this particular time, and here is the actual code change that someone made as part of that deployment. So if there's something wrong, I know what to blame. I can also, you've also got the link to the actual application, and there's the actual application when it wakes up the website that we deployed as part of it. So that's how easy we made this. We're continuing to expand this and try to really bring back the bring down the hurdles for getting people started with DevOps. So I'm really excited about this. It's live now. Give it a spin. Tell us what you think.
All right.
I'll hang around.
So when you leave, here are the three things I want you to take away. First, Team Services and TFS are a great DevOps platform for any of your applications, any platform. Doesn't matter what the technology stack is, it will help you automate your DevOps process and achieve your goals. Second, as you go through your DevOps process, don't think about just speeding up what you do, but think about changing what you do. Think about the shift left, think about the shift right, and how you need to adopt new tools and new processes in order to accomplish your DevOps goals. And third, think about the interplay of DevOps and cloud. The two go hand in hand, and you need to be doing both. So do me a favor, visit visualstudio.com, download the latest version of Team Foundation Server 2017, get yourself a Team Services account, and download the Visual Studio 2017 release candidate. Thank you very much.